How can our work become a way to love God, serve our neighbours, and demonstrate the gospel to the world? Hello and welcome to the God Story Podcast. I'm Brent Siddle, and my very special guest on the show this time is Jeff Hannon, who's here to talk about his new InterVarsity Press IVP America book called Working from the Inside Out, a brief guide to inner work that transforms our outer world. Now, Jeff is a writer and entrepreneur. He founded Denver Institute for Faith and Work, a community of conveners, teachers, and learners offering experiences and educational resources on the gospel, work, business, and culture. Jeff writes for Christianity Today and Comment Magazine and is the author of An Uncommon Guide to Retirement. I love the title of that. What is an uncommon guide to retirement? We'll have to ask him. Finding God's Purpose for the Next Season of Life. And Jeff joins me now from the States. Jeff, hi.
Great to be here, Brent. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And before we get on to this new book, what is an uncommon guide? How do you write an uncommon guide to something?
Yeah, you think you could write a common one, but, you know, publishers do these things. They make titles, and then I have to deal with it for the rest of my life. I could give you a brief overview of the book, but it is a biblical understanding of retirement that really looks at a season of rest, interior renewal, and re-engagement as elders that care about the well-being of our society. So there's the short summary of the book. Yeah.
It sounds great. Perhaps we can talk about that one, but let's get on to the new one. Why is work, because you write a lot about work, and as someone who's been working all of his life and done workplace ministry and stuff like that, why is work such a struggle for nearly all of us?
Well, it was Genesis 1 and 2, and then it was Genesis 3. So that's why it's a struggle for all of us. There are thorns and thistles, and there's pain that we all experience on a day-to-day basis, right? So this could be underpaid. It could be underappreciated. It could be a coworker conflict. It could be we don't see purpose in it, in our work. I just think some people love their job, were called to it, are well paid and are happy and all their kids are well behaved. But most of us aren't like that. So I just think work is just, we all have to work in some respect or another at some point in our life. And all of us experience some kind of pain in our work. And so I'm writing a book for them.
Yeah, you sure did. Now, you quote a Gallup poll, which I found fascinating, which states that only 20% of us globally are engaged at work. Now, that's a very, very low percentage, but it doesn't surprise me. Why is that? Why are we so disengaged?
Well, I think it depends on any given person. So that is a Gallup poll that talks about the difference between engaged, disengaged, and actively disengaged. What's kind of funny about that, actively disengaged people are actually working against the purposes of the company or organization that they're employed by. So if you think about leadership is going this way, there's a good portion of the world that is actually working in the opposite direction. Why are we disengaged? This could be a lot of different things. I think the best thing for us to think about is really Genesis 3. There is pain and thorns and thistles and difficulty in our work. And I think there is some good research about this too. So one of the things I read about in the book, people don't leave jobs necessarily because they're not well paid or even because they don't like it. They generally leave because of bad managers. That's the general. And so if I was going to summarize why people are disengaged, it's because they don't feel either dignified, they don't feel engaged with like their management team, they don't feel like they're not growing or developing. Because at some point, if you're just trading your hours for dollars, you think, oh no, I'm actually trading my life here. Yeah. And I think people are smart. People are thinking about these things. And so if I was going to say number one reason why people are disengaged, it's bad management.
Yeah. And also bad systems, I guess, too. Let's come on and talk about your background, because you write a lot about your personal background before you get into all the theology of work. But how did I think you write you had let your work deform you. Now, how had you let your work deform you, as you put it?
Yeah. So I was like most people earlier in my career, filled with starry-eyed optimism. And I'm not a cynic now, but I'm certainly not where I was before. I could maybe share a brief story, a portion of it that I put in the book. Early in my career, I was working at a Christian school. I had this dream and this vision of an organization that would connect gospel to work and to our culture. And I did it. I started to put together a board and organization and started to fundraise. And I was surprised as anybody, but we started to have some success. People would come to events and some people would download the content we sent out. And that was my own sort of shocking experience. Then, you get in a few years, and things are growing, and this is good, and I'm liking it. I'm feeling personally satisfied and lifted up, right? About 5 years into my professional career, I started to notice things were changing in me. So I would come home just exhausted and sometimes fall asleep an hour and a half or two before my wife. Sometimes I'd just lose my temper with my kids, and I didn't know why I was losing my temper with my kids. And I'd have to apologize because I started to get concerned. I was going to really just not physically hurt them, but just even spiritually or emotionally hurt them. And when things were going well at work, I was on top of the world. I was the king of the world, just like Leo in Titanic. And when things went wrong, right, and when things did not go well, when I was slighted by somebody, I was rejected, things failed, I felt borderline despair and depression just come over me quite regularly. That then now I'm leading a Christian organization. I have to sort of hide that. That's kind of how I felt. I just had to sort of hide those things. And I didn't realize at the time, work, of course, can be good. And I've heard that for years about theology of work and all these good Genesis 1 and 2 things that work ought to be in God's kingdom. And yet I had sort of taken work into myself in a way where I was seeking so much, not only meaning and purpose, but I was making work, I would say, an idol in my life. So I think work can deform us in lots of different ways. I think one of them is we expect too much from work, like it's going to meet all of our dreams. But we can also see that work can be deformative in lots of ways, right? It can be, you might be in a very unhealthy system. It could be a school, it could be a clinic. You might have to be selling things. 1 in 9 people in the global economy works in sales. Do you really believe in what you're selling, or are you just doing that to hit your number, right? There is a lot of people in the world that are not telling, like, this is God's purpose for my work, right? They're just saying, this is what I've got to do to get by. And in the process, we must be careful. Who are we becoming in the process of making these little wounds that we take in ourselves over time? So I wanted to write a book about those things and take an honest look about who are we becoming in the process of work if we're going to be honest with ourselves.
Yeah, and obviously you founded the Denver Institute. Tell us about the Denver Institute and what it does.
Yeah, so that was the story I was sharing of the organization I founded. It is Denver Institute for Faith and Work. It is principally a regional organization that serves in our region, the Rocky Mountain region here. But it's an educational organization. Our mission is to form men and women to serve God, neighbor, and society through their daily work. So the organization that I had the privilege of working on building was focused on content, and there's a leadership program we put together called the 5280 Fellowship, which is a reference not to a Bible verse, but to the Mile High City, 5280 feet. We did public events and all sorts of different stuff on gospel work. And in that process, I just had amazing opportunity over 10 years to talk to just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people about what they feel about their work. And this book is a partial result of my
Yeah,
experience there.
for sure. Who are some of the people who've inspired you the most? And in fact, you mentioned quite a few of them in the book, don't you?
Yeah, there are quite a few. I've got about 50 stories of people that inspire me in the book. And so I could mention just a few. One of them would be a woman named Tracy Matthews. She was a business consultant. She got her MBA, and she decided over time, though, to start an organization called Attune. And it's about attuning ourselves to the Spirit of God to understand where the Spirit might be leading in the day-to-day of our work. So if we're thinking about how to live out faith and work, well, listening to God's voice and making decisions based on the prompting of the Spirit, like, she's leading the way in that. And she took a very non-traditional path to get there. So that is inspiring. I'll give you one other story that I put in there, a guy named Dave Meyer. Dave went to my church. He was an engineer, but actually decided to leave that and drove a bus for years in the Cherry Creek School District, which is on the west side of Denver. I'm sorry, the east side of the Denver metropolitan area. And faith at work for him meant developing relationships with students, like good relationships. And so there was one boy that kept on coming in his bus every day. His dad was actually back in China, and him and his mom were living in the United States. And he ended up not only seeing him, but building a friendship. And their families ended up sharing meals together. And they ultimately just became close friends. And for him, for Dave, like, the type of relationships I have with my coworkers is an expression of God's own relational self. So I have sort of five frameworks for how I think about integrating faith and work, which perhaps we'll get to in this interview. But those are just two people that are doing just some small and really beautiful things when it comes to integrating faith and work.
Yes, we will come on to your five frameworks, and your answer just leads beautifully into one of them. What are some of the ways that we can build relationships at work with our colleagues, customers, and bosses? Because that's one of your principles, isn't it?
Yeah, so the second principle, actually in this book, I actually put it in the third, is embrace relationships. Yeah, so I think one of the things that we can do is decide, it's just something that can be very practical, decide that coworkers are people first. And I know that may seem obvious, right? But either your boss or those, your customers or your coworkers, they're not just there to get me something, or they're not a means to an end, but they're people first. So even if it doesn't benefit you to go the extra mile, and even if you don't get seen, or even if you don't get a promotion, people are people first, right? It's this philosophy of personalism that all people have intrinsic value. And so I do think, like, even on the embrace relationships side, if you just take those little extra steps to say, no, nobody is paying me to build a healthy culture at my workplace, but because they're people, I might just make these little steps of who's going to do the holiday party, right? Are we going to remember when somebody's mother passes, right? Those types of things, I think, make a huge, huge difference for being what I would call redemptive presence in the workplace, when you just see that there are people everywhere around you and not just means to an end.
Yeah, for sure. Why is it important to serve others? You've already talked about this, really, haven't you? Why is it important to serve others sacrificially in our workplaces?
Yeah, so in the framework in the book, I have this interior to exterior journey. So the seek deep spiritual health and think theologically are principles for the interior journey. The exterior journey moves out to embrace relationships, which I just shared about, and then create good work. So both the relationships and the culture in the workplace matter, as well as what you actually do, right? What you actually build also very much matters to the Lord. The final one is a civic move, where it goes from exterior to our civic. And as I think about what kind of an influence Christians ought to be having on the world, sacrificial service is how I would summarize it. And that word sacrificial is important, because as we engage culture, I think people can feel, particularly people of faith, can feel somewhat threatened by the way the world is going. But I think rather than thinking about conquering culture, how do we actually engage as sacrificial servants? So I wrote in this book a little bit about what does it look like to advantage others, even if I'm disadvantaged, right? What does it look like if you're cleaning hotel rooms, or if you're working in philanthropy, which could be a lots of different ways we do serve others sacrificially. So in the book, I've got several different examples, everything from small business entrepreneurs to teachers doing some of that sacrificial work. But I think for, you know, our listeners today, taking that extra step and caring about the poor, the widow, the orphan, the foreigner, and particularly in and through the agency we have at work, is a very Christian thing to do.
I've come to believe, you write, that a vibrant whole life can actually be lived out in the reality of our lives, even in the most everyday of activities, like selling used cars. I've never had to sell used cars. I've sold a lot of other stuff, but never used cars. How do we actually do that? Coming back to one of your principles, how can we all learn to think theologically about our work? Say, for example, we do go to work to sell used cars or something else. How do we think theologically about it?
Well, I think one thing that we can do to think theologically is understand everything in light of the big story, the big biblical story, which I hear you talk a little bit about on this podcast.
We do. We try to.
And so thinking about not only in the Reformed tradition of creation, fall, redemption, consummation, or some others will add sort of the story of Israel as well as the sending of the church into those sort of a structure, I do think we can apply that to our work. So everything has a story about what was originally good, what went wrong, what ought to be, what the future could look like, and what we should do about it. And I just think in, like, practically in our workplaces, we don't only have to do the things that are assigned to us, or don't only have to do the most immediate things. We can take a step back as people of faith, and we can say, for instance, what about my company? what about my product or service is genuinely good that I can get behind, right? Second, what is genuinely broken or fallen or messed up in our workplace, in our industry, in my heart, in relationships at my workplace? Just be honest, what's there? And then I think that step of creative imagination that we're thinking about the consummation of all things, I think we can take a look and say, what might this look like if that broken thing was healed? And then I think the final move is sort of that redemptive move. It is prayerfully bringing it before the Lord, saying, okay, I can't change everything. However, here I am. I can do something. And so that's the movement. That fourth movement is the movement of calling. What do I do about this right here, right now, as the Holy Spirit is leading me in that next step? So that's kind of how I would start thinking theologically about just a job or your work.
Yes, I can't resist asking this question. We've already started talking about it, really. How do we think theologically about sales?
Well, that's a good one. That's a good one. So that's a that's that's I actually have a story of a coworker.
You
His name
do?
is Brian Gray. He did several sessions with some of our young leaders on sales because he found that a lot of our young leaders that we were working with, they're not CEOs, they're not leaders of the company, they're just out there to go hawk the product, right? Like that's their job. And so we did a couple of different sessions on selling Christianly or thinking theologically about sales. So you could apply that framework that I just said, right, about even sales. So what's good about sales? Well, lots actually. A market where people are exchanging goods and services. I have money, but I need this good or service over here. Like there's just a lot of good that are in sales. Well, just right out there. You're not
Yeah.
there. You're not the sleazy car salesman. Like that's just not right, right? If you're actually bringing something to the market that the market needs, that I think is an act of neighbor love. However, what's broken about sales, right? Well, I think you'd probably say maybe some of our incentive structures, maybe selling things that you don't believe in or that are maybe are not good, right? Or you know are problems in it, all of those different things. One of our fellows did a work and she did a project called Selfless Sales. And what she did is she rethought the incentive structures for a sales team at a small credit union, because that was a real broken thing with just like how much can you sell? You get a percentage of that, and lots of salespeople are motivated in that way. And so she kind of imagined what would be differently. She felt called to that. That's that fourth thing, and then she engaged, saying, "I think we could do this a little differently." And she brought it to her boss. Her boss was like, "That's great. We should totally do that." And it was implemented in the company. So she just took a everyday job and took that extra step of leadership. So, and that's maybe too quick of an overview. Sales is obviously a big world and complex, but there's something good, there's something broken, there's something that you could do about it. Now, what will you do about it?
Yes, I spent part of my time in England working for a company that was about fixing, finding solutions, but for people with cars. And I spent most of my time on the phone just listening to people's complaints and trying to fix them. It was a great job. I loved it. What for you makes a successful business?
Making money, isn't that what a successful business
Really?
is?
Well, yes, up to a point.
Tell me more about your question. What do you think? I mean, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, Brandon, on what that looks like.
Well, I mean, I'm interested to know what in terms of people and what happens on the shop floor and the company office, what makes it successful? I mean, if you're measuring success, you're obviously measuring success in ways other than just financial success, although that's
Yeah.
important too. People have to make money to survive.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, it's for a believer. This is not only about financial success, though I wouldn't undermine that too. If you have margin, you can do lots of good stuff in a
Yeah,
community
for
that
sure.
you can't do otherwise. So, what is success? I mean, my language, I guess, in the book for holistic discipleship is a sort of working from the inside out world, right? And it's holistic health, it's spiritual health, right? Intellectual, physical, relational, company health, and then how is your company influencing a community? And those health sort of comes from the inside out. So I think business success should mean that the people that are being touched by the business, the customers, vendors, supply chain, employees, they themselves are very whole people. And that, I mean, I think particularly the most important part of money, if you can use extra money to lift up those that don't have much, I mean, there's a beautiful part. of business there. And there's a real broken part where we think about maximizing profit for ourselves far beyond the needs that we may have as well. So I think something like holistic health for the people involved in a business and for those around a business is what success ought to look like in a business.
Yeah, for sure. What are some of the ways that we can help employees grow in working well with coworkers? It seems to be it seems to be difficult these days in many companies to get people to work together, let alone work well together.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe it's not only these days. Maybe it's always been that way.
I think it's always been that way.
Darn it. People are tough, including me. people are hard. So, you know, as I think about building good, healthy cultures, I think I had a little bit of a section in the book around in the Embrace Relationships about healthy teams and healthy cultures. And I think there is an important investment in an organization you can make in self-awareness, understanding yourself, and understanding those you work with. That may not, again, directly be related to the product or service you're providing, okay? But if I have an understanding, for instance, of, wow, I get really emotional when somebody says sure to me rather than yes, for instance. I mean, why is that? I don't know. I don't know your story, but somebody may feel that way. If I grow in self-awareness, I am going to have a lot better relationships with others because I know where I'm coming from. And then I think that actually can grow into one of the activities that, for instance, that we did with some of the organizations we work with at Denver Institute was called a user guide activity. So you think about a user guide for a phone or, you know, your lawnmower or whatever it might be. We would go through an activity of walk your coworkers through how to best work with you. And this would be everything from communication preferences to your sort of personality type. I mean, it's a free download on the Denver Institute website. But doing that, when we did that the first time, even on our team, and we were, you know, faith and work experts, supposedly, it was just revelatory. Like, how could people be motivated by that? How could people think that? It just was so strange. And these were the people that were sitting right next to me, people that I loved, right? So to answer your original questions, how do you get people to work together? Invest some time and money on your own self-awareness and really understanding the human being, again, that person that you're working with that isn't fully captured by a job description.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Absolutely. Gosh, there's so much. I could talk to you for hours about all this. We've only gotten about another 7 minutes. How can we turn our workplaces into something more human?
Yeah, so I wrote about the designing workplaces to be more human. I tried to translate some of the language that we've even been talking about on this podcast into sort of non-Christianese, because you can't go into a lot of workplaces in a secular culture and say, let's think theologically here. You know, that's just, I haven't found it to work terribly well, right? But you can say, are we really caring about people's emotional and spiritual health, right? Are we really investing in their capabilities, right? Do we really have a team healthy, a culture that's healthy here? Yes or no, right? Do we really create good products and services that our customers want? And are we actually having a positive influence on our community? So I said those five things. I didn't reference Jesus. I didn't reference God. I didn't reference any of those things, but those each sort of derived from those five principles that are very much woven into the biblical story. And so I think when you design workplaces to be more human, thinking about some of these categories of really investing in people's holistic health, I just think those are very, very important. And when we lose track of work is there to serve people, people aren't there to serve work. Like, God gave work as a gift to us. So not just to fit us into jobs, but he gave it as a gift for us to translate neighbor love into communities and systems and societies that can actually care for others. So that's just one idea of using some of the language that anybody could work through and then talking with the team of what does it look like to be a little bit more, not just Christians, that's what was my conversation there. But N.T. Wright talks about how God is making us more human. How do we become more human and whole in these contexts? And I think that's good language to use.
Yeah, it leads me on to my last question, really. How can we translate faith into our workplaces? Can we translate faith into our workplaces?
Yeah, and I have a chapter on that as
You
well
do?
on
A very
yeah,
fine one.
translating your convictions, right? How do you do that? So, we'll have to get the book to do all of it, right? But I do think I'll just give one little snippet because I know we're running out of time. I do think you can be very intentional about the language you use in the workplace. So, for instance, I have a friend who works in a at a private equity company, which is a company that buys and sells other companies. And he said the de facto values of that company were greed, greed, and more greed. Though they didn't say that on the website, right? But that's kind of what he felt like working there. It was tough. On his whiteboard in his office, he wrote language like integrity, grace, humility, and love. And then people would go into his office and look at these words, like, what are you talking about? And so it's kind of like a pre-apologetic conversation of integrity, love, grace, humility. Like, where do you get that from? And I think that's one way to translate faith into a secular workplace is just be intentional about the values that you have, both the ones you can get behind in your company, and then ones where you might change or add as a person of faith that might pique somebody's interest.
Yes, I found trust was essential. Building trust and rapport with customers. If they trusted you, they would buy things from you. If they didn't trust you, they wouldn't.
Yeah, amen. Trust
Yeah.
is the grease in our economy for
Yeah,
sure.
absolutely. Look, Jeff, thank you so much for your time. Great discussion. The book from IVP America is called Working from the Inside Out, a brief guide to inner work that transforms our outer world. We have only had time to touch the surface. There's heaps more on this. I know I read it and thoroughly enjoyed it. Where can people find you on social media, Jeff, and on the internet?
Yeah, Jeff.Hanen. I'm sorry, JeffHanen.com is my personal website. And then I have a LinkedIn profile, which I don't do a ton with. But JeffHanen.com would probably be the easiest place somebody could find me.
And I think I called you Jeff Hannon, so I must apologize. Jeff
No
Hannon.
worries. You are forgiven. We anglicized it several generations back.
Jeff Hannon here. Jeff Hannon's book, yes, Working from the Inside Out. Jeff, thank you so much for your time. And thanks to our creative team at Liquid Edge, who sponsor this podcast and who take care of things behind the scenes. Jeff, bless you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the God Story podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a review and make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next one. Links to the books and topics mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes, and you can discover bonus episodes on our Patreon page. As always, you can get in touch via our website, godstorypodcast.com. That's godstorypodcast.com.